Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Okay, here's my disclaimer. I didn't get to watch game one of the Lightning against the Panthers. So maybe that's, you know, not doing a very good job on this end of the podcast. I have, however, read a lot about it and watched a lot of highlights, if that counts for anything. And what I can tell you is that to start the game anyway, the Tampa Bay Lightning went about 16 minutes and had no shots on goal.
Well, for a while they had one shot.
They had one?
And then they took it away.
Well, there you go. See, that's the mental edge right there. Like, why did they have to take away that shot on goal? So they were goose-egging it for a good yeah. portion. Now, having said that, they were down 1-0 early on that tip, which I there's nothing I don't think Vasilevsky could have done, certainly about that. Maybe put somebody else in front of the net to help that situation. But that aside, and then before you know it, you know, they go into the second period. It's tied 1-1, right? So you're pretty happy at that point if you're a Lightning fan. And again, not watching the game, just seeing the highlights. But like on the whole, so they lose 3-2, and that included an empty netter by Florida late. It also included like what, a 6-on-4 at the
They had a power play
30 something seconds left. Yep. Yeah. And so it's a little deceptive. The bigger number there is one, right? Which isn't really the number of goals that they scored before the final seconds and the man advantage. And I think it's fair to ask, and I think John Romano did a good job about this in his column, is that, look, Nikita Kucherov has had an MVP season. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about him accounting for 50% of all the scoring on this team. And that being said, can a team like Florida, or anyone else for that matter, but let's get by the Panthers first, can they focus on just taking Kucherov out as best they can, focus all their energies on Kucherov, and that might be enough to sort of derail the Lightning?
It's certainly possible. You know, the Lightning have not been a great 5-on-5 team this season.
That's correct.
Typically they are, but this year, I think with finally all the losses on the team have mounted where they just don't, they're not as deep, and we've talked about that.
Sure.
The addition of Anthony Duclair definitely adds some depth to the scoring.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In your forward lines. But let's not forget this game against Florida, 5-on-5, the score was 1-1.
And that's a win for the Lightning, I think. You know, if you just said that, you know, it will go 5-on-5 and be even with them.
They both got a power play goal. They both got a 5-on-5 goal, and then Florida had the empty net goal. So the order of the goals is what it happened. But 5-on-5 play, the Lightning tied this game. It was 1-on-1, 1-to-1. Mm-hmm. Now, the Lightning spent more of the game in their own defensive end. Florida's forecheck is very good.
Yeah, we knew that.
But the Lightning's defense has been an issue all year.
Mm-hmm.
They D'd up on Sunday.
Yeah.
Like, Florida had a lot of possession. They had some shots, but the Lightning's defense was stout. I mean, there was the first period, I mean, Florida, most of the shots were from the outside.
Yeah.
Like
even the goal was a tip. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Lightning spent more time in their own end than in the offensive end, but
way more time. Yeah.
But it wasn't like it was a high danger scoring chance every time Florida was in the offensive end either.
Yeah.
I mean, they D'd up really well, which is one of the concerns you had going into the series is could they D up?
Yeah.
Against a team with as aggressive a forecheck as Florida has.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for the most part, you can say they did on Sunday. Now, was it enough that day? No. Now, the part about Kucherov, in hockey, the home team gets last change.
That's right.
So when you're on the road, every time Kuch, for a face-off, every time Kuch goes out on the ice, Florida gets to pick who they want out there to defend him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the advantage of being the home team in hockey.
Yeah.
That's the biggest advantage, is that you get last change. So on the road, it's always harder to free up your stars. In the run of play, as you're, you know, running lines and the you know, changing on the fly, it's a little easier. But it's always harder on the road. So it's something the Lightning are going to have to figure out. How can we get him more space? How can we get him more scoring opportunities? Now, the Cirelli-Stamkos Hagel line scored that first goal. And it was a great play. Cirelli won the faceoff. Stamkos takes the shot. Gets a rebound. Cirelli takes another shot. Rebound. Hagel puts it in. Great play by them. Like, that line did exactly what you want a second line to do. And scored that goal. So it's going to be interesting, the adjustments John Cooper makes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the whole thing about a series in hockey.
There's ebb and flow most of the time.
Whatever happens game one kind of sets the tone in this, but then it's the adjustments that each team makes.
Correct.
Whether it's changing lines or changing, you know, how you're going to enter the zone or, you know, what lines you want to put. You know, I want to try to get Cooch on this defensive pair instead of this, or, you know, all those things that happen. And, you know, momentum doesn't necessarily carry from game to game. Confidence does, it's the adjustments. And, you know, we'll see what adjustments they make. So far, as we tape this game, the sixth game of the Stanley Cup playoffs is just starting. But the first five, the home teams won all five.
Yeah, that's surprising to me. It really is.
It is.
I mean, they may be better teams because that's why they're hosting, but I think, too, that I've always thought there's so much pressure to start a series at home from an expectation standpoint. And let's be honest, you have to win both if you're the home team. Otherwise, you give up your serve, you know, and now you're going on the road with it tied 1-1. And that's what the Lightning face. You know, their job is to go into Florida and win one of these first two games. And they didn't get game one, but if they get game two, they're happy as hell. And as they always say, the series doesn't begin until somebody wins a road game.
Right.
And that's true, just from a mathematical standpoint. But let's go back to Kucherov just a little bit, because Romano points this out, and I think it's worth stating, is that the Lightning are 8-1 when Kucherov scores in the playoffs. They're 8-13, which is a .380 winning percentage, when he doesn't. Now, you could say that about a lot of top scorers, right? When your guy scores and we win, when he doesn't, he doesn't. But I think the disparity is bigger than you'll find on most teams, simply because he just accounts, you know, for so much of their scoring. And that might, you know, you talk about adjustments. I mean, Cooper didn't just sit on his hands over there. He tried some stuff, right? He tried to shake it up. Mm-hmm. He got Hagel on the top line in place of Duclair. At that point, it was what Kucherov, Duclair, and Braden Point had just had one shot on goal. Right. So he's going to shake it up, try to do it mid game. It is going to be interesting to see if he does it to start game two. But he just kind of, you know, he follows his gut. Things weren't going very well. You know, so he tried something different. And they have that flexibility, you know. But I think, too, and we can get into kind of more of a macro discussion about this if you want, is, as you mentioned, they did. They were tied 1-1 in 5-on-5 hockey against this team, which is really good, right? Mm-hmm. This Florida team's explosive, but on the season, I never got a sense. Even with the additions, obviously, of Duclair and some of those guys has helped lengthen their lines. But for the most part, they have not been a great 5-on-5 team. They were in game one. They were even, but this is a team that relies, or has relied, so much on the power play and special teams on both sides, really, but particularly goal scoring. And this happens every hockey season, postseason, Steve. And I guess you could argue it does in other sports too, but I notice it more in hockey than maybe anywhere else, because, you know, when you have one of the best power plays in the NHL and you know, you take advantage of that on a nightly basis. But then they get in the postseason, and I don't know if they have a meeting of the NHL officials, or it's human nature, or it's the crew that night. I really don't. I think a lot of it's human nature, right? Is the old axiom that, well, you know, you don't want the referees to decide this. This is championship time now. You know, you'd hate to have a referee, a whistle, decide the outcome of it. Well, you know what? Not blowing the whistle does that, and maybe even more so. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they let stuff go, And then guys start taking liberties with your better players. And now you can end up losing a guy for the series, which is the ultimate danger of this. But just in general, it's like if it's a penalty in the regular season, if it's a slash, a hold, a trip, whatever, right? Cross check. Why is it not in the postseason? In other words, why is there more leniency towards fouls that you don't call simply because we don't want to decide? And in effect, you are deciding. You know, you're deciding that you're going to penalize the other team for getting fouled and not calling it. I just, that has never made sense to me. And I just think it's, to me, it's more noticeable in the NHL playoffs than some of the other things.
I think it's more noticeable because that one goal can be the difference of winning.
That's true. Yes. That's a good point.
Yep. You know, that one power play.
Yes.
Can change everything. I don't think there's a concerted effort to let things go more, but I think it's human. I think officials don't want to, well, if I'm not 100%, if I'm 80% certain that was a penalty, do I want to call that? Like, I think there's a lot of human nature in it.
I think it's human nature. I do too. You know,
I got to be 100%.
I got to be sure. I can't give an advantage. Yeah.
Right. Right. And it shouldn't be. I mean, I've never understood. And NHL is not the only one, but it's one of them. We hear all the time that leagues, we want more scoring. We, you know, baseball, we want more balls in play. We want that. You know,
oh yeah.
I mean, you know, we want more touchdowns. We're, you know, we basically let the offense do whatever they want, and the defense can't do anything.
Touch a receiver, can't hit a quarterback. Yeah,
but right. Then you get to the playoffs, and you let muggings go on, and don't call it
with weapons.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and
with sticks and blades.
We want scoring. We want scoring, and we get to the playoffs, and we're okay with no scoring.
And then it becomes a bad product in a sense, right?
I don't know if it's a bad product, but it's, you know, Winnipeg and Colorado just played a 7-6 game. It was great. It was fantastic. It was great. Goalie coaches probably don't think so, but I not calling penalties is the same as calling a penalty. Like, you impact the game. Officials
maybe
impact the
so.
Game no matter what.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Whether you call it or not, you've impacted the game.
Right.
If you call a penalty that shouldn't be a penalty, that you've impacted. If you don't call penalties that are penalties, you've impacted the game.
Well, and I'll tell you why I think it's more so, is because whether direct or indirectly, you're sending a signal that we're going to let stuff go, right? And you know how smart players are. They get it, right? They figure it out pretty quickly. You know, I can hold here, I can rough there. Like, it just, you know, they're really adept to what's going on around them. So I think the biggest danger is you could get a guy hurt, and that's going to change history, right? If you let Kucherov get whacked, which he did, by the way.
There was a penalty early in the game.
They didn't call him.
He got hit very late.
Yeah. He was no longer playing the puck, and he got destroyed.
And so had he had the puck, the hit was legal.
It was legal, right?
But the puck was long gone, and it was late. That should have been called.
And that should have been a penalty. And it should be a penalty in the regular season, and it should have been a penalty after, you know, in this game.
Yep.
And again, give the Lightning another power play. I was listening to Dave Michigan. It was funny because the Lightning did get a power play with about 30-something seconds or so to go.
Yeah, really late.
And Dave, having not seen the game, but I could feel his frustration, he went off as only Dave can do. He goes, oh, now we get a penalty. Oh, of course. He goes, and it was a penalty. He goes, but yeah, now they can look at the scoreboard and say, see, you had three power play. They had two. You had two. They had three. It's pretty much even. He goes, well, you know what? It wasn't even because they missed so many calls. And, you know, that's got to be a real frustrating point. And then, of course, you know, there's the, you know, the tried and true, you know, sort of mantra of sports where you go, well, you can't let the officials decide the outcome, right? You have to overcome non-calls or bad calls. And there's some truth to that. You can't expect them to bail you out. But I think that's tough for a team like the Lightning, especially this year. But, you know, it's overreaction Monday, right? Because you lose game one. I'm not real sure going into the postseason how deep this Lightning team could go. I actually thought the game wouldn't be this close. And at 1-1 with a chance, you know, tie it up, and if they didn't start the next period with about a minute and 28, minute 30 in a power play, which they gave up, that's a different game. But let's see now. This is where winning two Stanley Cups, being the three. Let's see what John Cooper can do, because I'm always fascinated, as much as any sport, right? Like, the manager in baseball writes out a lineup card, and the, you know, certainly game to game, you don't play a series in the NFL, so you're playing a different opponent, so there's no carryover. What's great about the NHL is that you'll see an adjustment, maybe from both teams, but you'll see as the series go on and they get a feel for each other, one team might actually find an advantage somewhere with a line, with this or that. And so I'm anxious to see what Cooper, if he makes any changes in this game too.
Well, and look, you can go back to lots of series in the past where the adjustments that John Cooper and his staff have made from particularly game one to two, but throughout series have won them series.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the way they shut down Austin Matthews.
Perfect example.
A few years ago, I remember, this is many years ago, but you know, Boston beat Tampa Bay like 6-3 in game one at Amalie Arena. Brad Marchand's line that scored five of the goals or whatever. Braden Point was a minus five for the game. Like, embarrassed. And they lost that game. They went out and won the next four, and Braden Point shut that line down like you've never seen before. Like, Marchand's line did nothing the rest of the series. Maybe a power play goal or something along the way, but 5-on-5, nothing. Like, they made adjustments. They changed things. Like, Cooper's game two record, and I don't know it off the top of my head, and maybe in recent years it's not as good, but for a while there, his game two record was phenomenal.
Right.
Like, close to perfect.
Yeah.
Like, game one was maybe 500, whatever, but game two, he was fantastic. Like, it's a seven-game series. It's about adjustments. And the way it, I'll be curious to see if it's as physical in game two as it was. I mean, there was, I didn't see if they adjusted the number down on the stat sheet, but it, you know, as the game ended, it was like 110 hits between the two teams.
But didn't you expected that, right? With Florida? I mean,
well, you expected that. It was, everybody was hitting everything in sight. Like, it was, you expected to be physical,
playoff hockey,
but it was,
man.
Well, but it was
a lot of,
maybe it was a little more than I was anticipating. Just not leaning on guys pushing, but the flat out going for big hits.
Just making runs, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of big hits on both sides. You know, I'll be curious if that continues in the series or if that was trying to set a tone.
Well, that's a good point. I wonder if both teams, right, want to establish them, but we're going to be the more physical team, right? Like, we're going to let you know right away that, you know, you better keep your head on a swivel. So there could have been some of that. I don't know. I think it's good.
I mean, you know, game one is, you do try to set kind of some time. I mean, let's see. Tampa Bay had 55 hits. Florida had 54. Yeah. So 109 hits between
that's
the
two. That's a lot of hits, man.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So each team had about a hit a minute.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. They were making some runs, and they both got their licks in. So
Matt Dumba had 10 hits himself.
Wow. That's pretty good.
He led the game in that category. Nikita Kucherov had 5. He was being physical.
Yeah, and them with him. It's just unfortunate. I mean, Verhaeghe's power play goal, you know, minute, what was it, 58 seconds or something in the second. That turned out to be...
In the third, yeah.
The big
That was a beautiful thing, play they ran, though, for that, though. Back
it was,
door.
Yeah. I've seen the replay, yeah.
Yeah, that was beautiful. So, I mean, but look, as you said, the series doesn't start till a team loses a road game.
Nope.
And... going down to Sunrise, yeah, you'd like to take both games. But
if you do one, you're fine. I mean,
your goal is, let's take at least one.
Yeah.
And come back to home ice and go from there.
Old serve.
That's all you're trying to do.
Yep.
There's good things to take away from this game. And Luke Lindenning and Tyler Mott both played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was huge because you weren't sure going in if they would.
Right.
So, you know, it's one game. Tip your hat to Florida. They're the Eastern Conference champs and defending champs. They played a good game.
Yeah. They're a tough team to play.
Mm-hmm.
The forechecking is a real deal.
Well, there's a reason that they won the division.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they went all the way to Stanley Cup, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't win it, but they've been there. They're kind of where the Lightning were a few years ago, in a sense. Many years ago, but, you know, when you have that experience and you know how to get there, that helps them too. It's two pretty, you know, pretty seasoned postseason teams, if you will. So I look forward to watching the whole game. I was in Dance World, you know, it's a competition Saturday, so I had to do that. But watched it as much as I could with replays and streaming and things like that. And I'm looking forward to game two, which be night game for me and you, Steve. We'll be up late.
Yes, 7:30 tomorrow night. It's a little bit later than normal, 7:30 for game two.
Little bit later, yeah. We'll survive it though, and see how it all plays out, and then back home to Amalie Arena. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Rays did not have much luck in winning that series against the Yankees. They fall 5-4. Nice rally there in the late innings. And they're 12-10, and they're going to host Detroit, who has the same record. Nothing will change, in my opinion, with the Tampa Bay Rays until or unless their two biggest stars finally get out of the funk, because they're not. You know, Yandy Diaz, I think you said he went 0-5. I know Randy
did
2 Ks,
I believe. Randy went 0-4 with 3 Ks, I believe.
3 strikeouts. He did get a walk in the 9th inning, stole second, so there was at least the threat of the tying run on board with a couple of outs. But, yeah, just look, no baseball team, I don't care if you're talking about Aaron Judge and Soto, you know, if they have more bats than that in their lineup, whereas the Rays, you know, are having to, you know, hoping to rely, at least for now. And I did see where Josh Lowe had a big night in AAA. I think he hit a home run. So maybe he's not that far away. But you've got to get those guys going, man. And I know they're trying to. I couldn't tell you what's wrong. I tend to think that when I watch Randy, I tend to think his strike zone isn't just organized, because it's funny in baseball, like when you're not going well, you take the pitches that are strikes and you tend to swing at the ones out of the zone. And there's no explanation for it except that you're 0-2 every time you get up there. They might as well put the scoreboard to 0-2 when you step up there when you're not going well. That's just the way it is, which was funny because he was 0-2 in the final inning and he coaxed a walk out of that. But until those guys are a big part of their offense, this is who they are. And I don't know that it's sustainable for guys like Rosario and some of those others to be on the pace that they're on, because they've been what's kept them in it. The other thing we noticed, and you looked up some of this before we did the podcast, is, hey, this is not a couples-only venue. I mean, the Rays are singles club, man. You know? Like, they don't get extra base hits. I think you said they were ranked in the bottom third.
They're 23rd or 24th in doubles, triples, and home runs.
Yeah, that's not good, right? I mean, especially last year, think about all the power that they displayed, especially early on during that 13-game winning streak. Yeah. It's not there now.
Nope.
They get a lot of flares.
Yeah, so they're 23rd, 24th in all those categories. Mm-hmm. But in total hits, they're 10th.
Oh, yeah. The other night, what was it, Game one, I think it was, they had like 14 hits, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you look up and you go, wow. Now, the other thing they're doing,
they're stealing bases,
series,
though.
They're stealing bases all over the place. The other thing they're doing is they're striking out. I mean, the other night they had like 14 strikeouts too, which wasn't good. And they had all those singles. Yeah,
they are the 9th most in baseball right now, strikeouts.
9th most, yeah. It's not good. And Randy's got to be way up there. In fact, I think I saw where Jose Siri, you told me he passed kidney stones. He's got kidney stones down?
Yeah, he missed the games day to day. I did fly back with the team, but yeah, he's...
I haven't had him. I know people that have. You ever had kidney stones?
I have not, thank goodness.
No. Yeah, well, knock on wood, because, yeah.
The only player on the Rays with more strikeouts than Randy is Siri.
Is Jose. And I think he was tied for the major league lead entering this game. I think he had 24.
Siri's got 34.
Oh, 34. I'm sorry. Okay.
He's got 34 and 69 at-bats.
God.
Half his at-bats are strikeouts.
That's not good, man. I can't tell you how bad that makes you feel as a hit. When you can't make contact and you go up there and turn left and strike out, there's nothing worse. You'd rather hit 5 pop-ups to the infield. Just make contact, man.
That's the way he swings. It doesn't seem like he cares that he strikes out because he's not even trying for base hits.
No, he's launching on everything. Yeah. He's trying to launch on everything. Although there's some situations he comes in where it's like, hey, man, just move the runner, right? Guy on second, less than two out. Like, you know, just hit the ball the right side. Like, sometimes you just wish that he could have productive outs, as they call it.
Series now tied for second in baseball and strikeouts.
Is he really? Wow. Yeah.
O'Neill Cruz has 37 now.
Thank God for O'Neill Cruz. Who's
but he's also got 17 more at-bats than Siri. So.
Oh, well, that's why. Yeah. If you gave Siri 17 more, you'd have nine more strikeouts.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah. That's not good, and not good that he's ill either. Randy made a heck of a play in center field, though, which was nice, down in the late innings. Kind of lunged at one that was over his head, but made the play. So yeah, they're gonna muddle around and you know hang around 500, which doesn't knock you out of the division by any means. This month is about two thirds or almost three quarters over.
But so now they got a surprising team in the Tigers who have the same record as the Rays coming to the Trop.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. I think maybe they're living off that excitement that the Lions brought them in the fall. I don't know. Maybe it's contagious.
Or just you can't just be that bad for that long.
That could be it too. You get that many high draft picks, eventually you're going to land on something, right? So, but they're back at the Trop, and, you know, that snapped their streak of non-series losses. But I didn't think, you know, they handled the Yankees, I thought, pretty well from a pitching standpoint. Their pitching has been, it's once again, not the way we thought. It's the starting pitching that's been so strong. But even their bullpen now is starting to come around. You know, you can see fewer walks. The other night when they won game two, they got, you know, three solid innings in a row from three different relievers. You know, so they're starting to even, and that's what happens in baseball, right? Things even out. But they're starting to attack hitters more.
Well, it evens out, but I also think the Rays are good at making those adjustments.
They've made, yeah, you got to give Snyder and those guys a lot of credit. I know they do a lot of work on the side between starts and stuff, and they certainly talk a lot about it. So, and maybe it's just the excitement of a, you know, of a new season. They didn't have Fairbanks one night. I guess he had a little stomach thing going on, so I didn't see him pitch in this series. That might be better for him anyway, the way things have gone. But yeah, so hey, couple games over 500, you're not out of it by any means. And
here's a guy I forgot that was on the race though. It was Erasmo Ramirez.
Shocked me. Absolutely shocked. I'm glad you brought him up.
I remember last year they brought him back, and I remember that, but yeah. I forgot he was on the team this year.
I had no idea. Hadn't seen him in a game, and then I turn on the TV. It's funny you said that because I turned it on, and the Rays got back in it, and they were down 5-4, and I look up, and it's like, and that's the play that Randy made, in fact, in center field on, I think, Erasmo's first hitter. And I went, Erasmo, first of all, I didn't know he's on the roster. And secondly, I didn't know he was with the club.
Well, they called him up Friday or Saturday. I don't remember which
day. But
so it is at least. I saw them call him up. That's when I was like, oh, crap.
So it's at least a recent call up. But I didn't know he was with their organization at all.
Yeah, because last year they brought him back, I remember. And he pitched some. And he pitched pretty effectively.
Yeah.
But I had forgotten he was on the team this year. So.
Yeah, that was a shock. I was like, holy cow, am I watching a new Rays game, or is this from about 3 years ago? Like, what the heck?
He pitched three scoreless innings today. Gave up one hit.
He did fine. Yeah, he did fine. He fills up a strike zone. It's just whether or not they're going to be good strikes or not. But
Savali was good until the fifth.
Yeah. No, it was listen, they had a chance to win, and they're kind of becoming this grinded out, as they've been in the past, grinded out team. Even if we're behind, we're going to, you know, drag you into late innings and still have a chance to get a bloop and a blast, we can win the game. And, you know, that's sort of what they did the other night in extra innings, getting a couple of runs. And they were right there with the go-ahead run at the plate, you know, in the ninth inning. Randy stole second, and there was your tying run when the ball game ended. So not like, you know, not like you have no chance. It's just you just need a bigger hit, and you could use some extra base hits because – this singles thing is just, you know, station to station is not going well. Although they do steal a lot of bases, as you pointed out to me just a little while ago.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right. Well, speaking of the Rays, they're going to host the Detroit Tigers at beautiful Tropicana Field. So we'll see what they can do with that home series. And then, of course, Tampa Bay Lightning back at it. Game two on Tuesday night down there in beautiful Sunrise. Meanwhile, we are just a couple days away from the NFL draft on Thursday. Can you believe it? I can, because I have a bunch of stories that I'm writing. In fact, I did over the weekend, so check those out. We'll talk about them maybe tomorrow a little bit. I still believe it never turns out the way you want it to if you're a team in the draft, especially when you're picking 26, but I still believe that the Bucs' biggest need is for an edge pass rusher. Yes, offensive line could be where they go, and is certainly maybe their second biggest need in interior offensive line with a guard or center, most likely center. There could be some there. But if you check out the Tampa Bay Times, tampabay.com, we talk about some of the edge rushers that they've had in as some of their top 30 visits and some that they visited at the combine. You can check that out. Of course, Shaquille Barrett's gone. This is the last year in a contract for Joe Tryon, Shawinka. We know how good Yaya Diaby was, but can they add to that and see if they can get more pressure in the front four? They haven't lacked in sacks. They've been pretty consistent with 45, 46, 47 ever since Todd Bowles got here. But the way they do it has been different. You know, the last two, 3 years, they've had to dial up that pressure to get linebackers, safeties, and the like to the quarterback. And you don't like to do that. It's nice to keep it in your bag, but you'd like to be able to just, you know, get that kind of pressure and those kind of numbers by rushing four and dropping other guys into coverage, and that makes it difficult on the other team's passing game. So I think, again, they'd be fortunate if one of the better edge rushers fell to them, but that to me is still their biggest need. And also a story about Dade City's Michael Penix, and I wrote about the quarterback position, and yes, the Bucs have looked at it, not just for Penix Jr., who, you know, Bruce Arians likes a heck of a lot, and he's a local kid and all that. But you've always got to be thinking about down the road. And, you know, Baker Mayfield is signed for 3 years, but if you look at the contract, it's really two guaranteed. And so, you know, what happens if this is Kyle Trask, as it is under contract, is his last year, and John Wolford is a year-to-year guy. He's got to sign a one-year deal. So do you really have a quarterback if something happens to Mayfield, or somebody that you want to bring up in the next 2 to 3 years if he falls to you that, you know, you're not in a hurry to play, but, you know, if Mayfield, who is 29, weren't to live up to his contract and you wanted to make a change, is that guy currently on your roster? So they may have to answer a quarterback question, or they may all be gone. There may be as many as six in the first round, including Penix and Bo Nix, and we'll have to wait and see how that all plays out. But anyway, check out that story on TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times. In the meantime, we got emails. Questions are always something we welcome on this podcast, and you can do that by sending them to us on X or Twitter at SportsDayTB, at SportsDayTB, or at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@TampaBay.com. Thanks for listening. For Steve Erstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.